On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When it comes to jobs for new college graduates, the class of 07 is in Fat City, we're told. Plenty of jobs, say reports from all over, with freshly minted engineers grabbing $50,000 and $60,000 starting pay. But beyond the job market, it's a wild world new grads face out there. War, global warming, shooters on campus, terrorists looking to attack Fort Dix, a global economy that can turn on you in a hurry, superpower uncertainty. So how do they see it? Up next on Point, we'll ask them. New grads from the class of 07 speak out on the world they are about to inherit. We have three terrific guests for our conversation today, all graduating this spring from college. With us from Atlanta is Nathan Meeks. He'll graduate from Emory University on May 14th with a degree in finance and Spanish. He's headed to Mexico on a Fulbright scholarship for a year when he returns. There's an investment banking job waiting for him on Wall Street. He's 22. Nathan Meeks, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
With us from Ames, Iowa, Joelle Klein. She's 22 as well, just graduated on Saturday with a degree in journalism and mass communications from Iowa State. She grew up in Iowa and likes it right there, now waiting to hear about a couple of job options in Des Moines with a Fortune 500 company or at a small public relations firm. Joelle Klein, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from San Diego, California, we're joined by Harry Khanna. He'll walk in cap and gown at the University of California, San Diego on June 17th. He's headed to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore this fall to go for a master's in biomedical engineering. He's 21 years old. Harry Khanna, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, class of 07 had three out of the whole country's worth of 07, and we found you all. We loved your stories, and we're grateful to you for being with us. We want to kind of get your take on the world you're headed into. Let me just ask you a very simple question to start off with. I'll go to you, Nathan Meeks, you first. Okay, here you are. It's 2007. You see what's out in the world. You're graduating into it. Do you feel lucky or unlucky for the moment?
Well, first of all, I'm just lucky to be graduating. I feel like that's how we all feel right about now. We yep. haven't, you know, while we've, you know, begin to think about what happens afterwards, we're still, you know, just facing on the next week. I graduate, and then after that, I can really dive into it. For the most part, I do feel lucky. I feel like while our generation and our class faces the adversities, you know, insurmountable adversities, so many things happening in the world, I feel like every class and every generation has to deal with such things.
Yep.
And it's how you deal with those things that really proves what kind of class and what kind of generation you are.
So maybe insurmountable, but everybody's got to face it. You're up for it. Joelle Klein, how do you see it? Lucky or unlucky, this moment that you're graduating into at Iowa State?
I guess I feel very lucky that I was able to go to a university that I was proud to be a part of and get a degree in something that I absolutely love to do. I feel lucky to go out into the work world and share my talents and just be an integral part of today's society.
So there it is. Another thumbs up. And Harry Khanna, how about you? How do you see the moment? Is fortune smiling on you as a 07 grad?
Well, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon here and say that, yeah, I feel very lucky. I mean, I think I'm very privileged to have gone to one of the best public institutions in the world. I think that our generation is sort of coming off the internet revolution. We've grown up with this kind of high technology, and I think this country and this world is ready for some major changes in the next century. So I feel very lucky that I'm going to be a part of that.
The beauty of youth. We're thrilled to have all of you up for the challenge, and it's just great. We want to understand each of you a little bit better. Nathan Meeks, tell us your story. You're from Houston originally. You're headed to Mexico for a year before you head to Wall Street. What put you on that path?
You know, to be honest, I'm not quite sure. A couple of years ago, I was just another finance major and Spanish major at Emory University, where, you know, an investment banking career, or at least a job, an internship for the summer, kind of fell into my lap. I decided to apply for it because I was interested in finance. And it turned out that I really loved it. I really liked being in New York with the people that I worked for. I worked on both sides in the investment bank, the sales and trading side and the investment banking side.
Yeah.
And at the end, I just decided to go with the sales and trading. I just felt like it was for me. And the Mexico, I've always had a passion for Spanish, I decided that, you know, before I went to the work environment, I wanted to see if I could maybe, you know, take a year off, see more of the world, regain personal experience. And so I applied for the Fulbright, and I was very, very blessed to receive it. So that's
Is this your way of dipping a toe in the globalized economy, the new kind of melding North American, Latin American scene?
I think that's most definitely the issue. I feel like in the future, you know, we are forced, or, you know, whether we like it or not, and I like it personally, into global integration, and to prepare yourself for that, it's more important to be knowledgeable about the global economy and to see exactly where our world is going.
Joel Klein, tell us about your story. You're looking around from Ames, little town with a huge student population, looking over to big Des Moines. You know, what are your immediate goals as you head out? You've got your diploma already. What are you aimed at now?
Definitely my goals right now is just to find a job that I love, and I enjoy going to work every day. I guess that's basically why I went to school and studied something I was very interested in. Not a lot of people are that lucky to find something they really like to do and get to do it on a daily basis. I came from a very small town, and Ames was kind of the next stepping stone into a bigger city. Yep. Not a lot of people would consider it a big city, just about 25,000 people without the student population. Des Moines is definitely somewhere I want to live and raise a family. They have, you know, low living costs, high opportunities for young people, and it's just continuing to grow and prosper, and that is something that interests me a lot.
You've got a degree in journalism, mass communications, and public relations, and out of those three, you're choosing PR. In an earlier era, do you think you would have been a journalist? Did you ever think about it now? Why PR as your focus?
I went to school originally to be a broadcast journalism major, and after coming and studying, taking some of the classes, and learning about the lifestyle of a broadcast journalist, the PR side appealed to me more. I liked working with the media, but kind of behind the scenes. It was just something that stuck out to me.
Harry Khanna, you've got an immigrant family story, as many Americans do, but yours is very recent. Tell us about your sort of path and where you're headed now. Where have you come from? Where are you going?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I was born in Maryland in Greenbelt, and I was raised in California, where I'm going to UC San Diego right now, and I'm actually moving back to Maryland to go to Johns Hopkins University. And I guess the reason I'm doing biomedical engineering is frankly, because I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. And I wanted to do something where I could have the biggest impact that I could in my life. And I wanted to do something where medicine affects everybody. Everybody in the world will at some point go to the doctor. And I wanted to do something where I could invent or innovate something that could be used by patients around the world. So I just kind of wanted to make the biggest impact possible. And biomedical engineering is something that I think is a great avenue to do that.
Your parents originally from India. How do you see that story? Are you part of the great American tale of immigrants coming, prospering, doing well in this country as the most recent immigrant on our panel today, immigrant family? Is the American story working for you?
Well, I have to say I really admire my mom and my dad who pulled off what they did. They moved from India to France where they got their PhDs, and finally they moved to America. So they kind of moved to America and they established a life for themselves here, and they raised me and my older brother here. I'm very blessed to be a part of the family, and I'm very proud of what my parents did. I was raised in the United States. I was born and raised in the United States. So I'm not as connected to my cultural heritage as perhaps I would hope. That's something that I hope I can correct. You know, as I get older, I can, you know, go back and visit where my parents are from.
Okay, Nathan Meeks, big question then. Here you are, you're stepping out on this stage. Every period, you said it yourself, has its challenges. I mean, there have been wars and bigger wars. But we've got one now. We've got all the climate change news in front of us, the challenges and competition from abroad. There's a lot of talk and hand-wringing in the United States in some quarters about, you know, whether your generation is being given the same opportunities, you know, walking into a world as welcoming and full of opportunity as your parents did. How do you look at that issue? Do you feel, you know, that you're getting a fair shake, that you've got as good a start as your parents did on the big stage of life?
Well, Tom, I believe that I have at least as good of an opportunity as my parents did. I mean, if you're talking to, I'd say, anybody on this panel, they're probably doing better, at least if not the same as their parents, just due to the fact that we had such access to education and opportunities to go after education. I mean, with the job I have now, I'll be making basically what my parents make in a number of years. And so, yes, I'd say that we are very lucky despite, you know, everything else. So the fair shake question is, of course, as I answered before, every generation has its adversities, and these, you know, we have to deal with ours too. But I feel like despite our adversities, we are better prepared than any other generation that has come before us to deal with such things.
Joelle, you're one of the first in your family to go to four-year college. How do you feel about the fair shake, the comparison to your parents' opportunities when they stepped out into the world? How do you feel set?
I feel as if I work in a fair shake. My father actually did not go to college, mm-hmm. and my mother had a 2-year degree. They were married when they were 19 and had me when they were 20. So I'm
they got
here
going in a hurry.
Yes. So here I am, 22. I have a bright career ahead of me in the future, and I get the time to plan out my life and figure out what I want to do. And
we're talking this hour with the class of 07, college seniors, grads, and soon to be grads, about their take on the world and the lives they're about to launch. Here's Bill Clinton delivering the commencement speech at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor on April 28th. He told graduates that anything was possible as long as it was through common endeavor.
Sure, climate change is a problem. Sure, religious and political discord is a problem. Yes, Darfur is an atrocity. Yes, we have to do something about all these problems in America. Yes to all the things you say. But none of those problems is beyond the reach of our common endeavor. All we have to remember is that it is our common endeavor. God bless you and good luck.
Common endeavor, says Bill Clinton, the answer to everything. Harry Khanna, how about it? Are you stepping in? I mean, you are stepping into a country that's been described as maybe as extremely polarized, politically polarized. Do you feel in your generation that same polarization or more open perhaps to the common endeavor approach to the problems we're looking at?
Well, I've lived in California my whole life, and I think most of my friends have been sort of the same political mind. And I do think that most of us here, at least most of my friends, agree that our goals are all common around the country, even if we have very divergent ways of achieving those goals. I mean, I think everyone just wants what's best for the country. Everyone just wants what's best for the world and for humankind. I think the division comes and the discord comes when people just have different ideas of how to get there. So I agree with Mr. Clinton in that there is a common endeavor.
Joelle, what's at the top of your list of challenges? Bill Clinton says, or just ticks off here, climate change, religious and political discord, Darfur, maybe that's a stand-in for war and violence around the world. When you look at challenges that your generation will face, how do you rank them? What do you put up at the top of your list?
Right now, I guess after, you know, watching the news and seeing it constantly, it would have to be war and what we're going to do, if we're going to pull out troops, if we're going to have a timetable as far as that's concerned. And definitely global warming has become an enormous issue, and we've kind of struggled with that recently.
In your circle, I don't know, your family, your relationships, is global warming, you know, recently it's picked up more of a head of steam. Al Gore says, in your lifetime, you and Nathan and Harry, it's going to be a big problem. Is that accepted gospel in your neck of the woods, Joelle?
I guess it just depends who you talk to. I definitely believe it's something that we need to work towards as a common goal of, you know, making this world a better place. I definitely have friends that don't believe in it as much and do think that it's kind of just something that's been fabricated to an extreme.
Including pretty close friends. I'm reading here,
yep,
in my notes. Your boyfriend and you had a big argument after watching The Inconvenient Truth. Tell us about that.
He, I guess, just believes that it's just something that he doesn't believe the numbers and the charts. He thinks that they're completely fabricated for propaganda purposes.
What do you say to him?
I guess that my point is, you know, maybe this won't directly affect our generation someday, but I want to have a family. I want to have children and grandchildren, and I don't want to bring them on the earth if they're going to have to deal with, you know, catastrophic events in the future.
Nathan Meeks, how do you see it? Is the crunch going to come in your generation? You're 22 years old. lifespans are going way out there. We're told in this century it could get pretty rough. How do you look at the climate issue?
The climate issue is definitely one of the main concerns, especially on college campuses. After the Inconvenient Truth, there was just a surge of information about global warming, if there hadn't been already. And I definitely think that we face quite a circumstance. At the same time, I also feel like because we learn about it, because the issue is now pushed to the forefront, a lot of the youth feel empowered. I find that now I look at my house and I say, well, these bulbs, I mean, why are they regular? They could be fluorescent. Not only that, but it saves me money and they last for 2 years. Why not do something that helps the environment and saves me money too? So we find that it's not necessarily a polar thing. It's not necessarily binary. You don't just do one or the other. You can improve your life and improve the environment at the same time. And once it becomes increasingly evident, I think we're on the way to recovery as far as the climate issues.
You're talking about bulbs and maybe putting in a fluorescent one for an incandescent, but do you have any expectation that in your lifetime, which is going to stretch out, who knows, potentially right to the end of this century, maybe beyond, are you going to have to change radically your generation, the way you live, the kind of things you do, the way you spend energy?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, the way we spend energy, especially, in Georgia and the United States, it's just so – there's so much of it. And we're using it as if, they can never run out of oil. They can never run out of other things. We have to switch our sources of energy, making an increased effort on renewable energy sources and more fuel efficiency if we're going to continue to use the fuel that we have. And it's going to take basically a paradigm shift as far as everything that we do. But as I said before, we're well prepared. Right now we're just getting to the point where in the stage of addicts, we're admitting we have a problem. And after that, there goes the diagnosis and then, going to address the problem. So I think we're on the right road.
Harry Khanna, be honest. In your generation, do you really see more adaptability, more readiness to change if the changes required are significant, extreme, even radical? Is your generation more up for that than the generations ahead of you have been on climate change?
I think that necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. And I think to this point, the whole country and the world has sort of been dragging their feet with respect to climate change and global warming. But once it becomes a real problem, and I agree with Mr. Gore that it very well could become a problem in our lifetime, once it really starts to become a problem, I think you're going to see the world and the country really change direction and really start to make concrete, tangible changes in the way we consume energy. You can see it in our generation already. Just on our campus this month, we had Earth Week where students were advocating for proper usage of energy and renewable energy and this and that. And you can see that there's already this collective action in our generation to prevent the acceleration of this inevitable global warming.
All right, Harry, Joelle, Nathan, we've got a lot of people who want to speak with you, proud representatives of the class of 07. Let me go to Moline, Illinois, and Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a quick thought and a question. My daughter graduated in 2004.
Okay.
She was lucky enough to find a job right off. She had one waiting, like two on the panel, have something going for them.
Great.
I just wonder if this is really the guest you have today is really a cross-section of the class of 2007, because in my daughter's class in 2004, there was some that waited a few. There was one that waited 2 years to find a position. And it was nothing to do. They graduated with honors, some of them, and it was just hard to find a job. My daughter had to go to Fort Worth, Texas, to find her job.
So she really had to stretch to find it. Have we got a representative panel here? Well, let's ask them how they look at that. Nathan, you're headed for Wall Street. It's been, the system's working pretty well for you here. Are you representative? You hear Stephanie's question.
I think that's a great question, Stephanie. And I believe that, at least as far as people in my institution at Emory University, I think a lot of us are definitely not having trouble finding jobs right out. Seeing as, how the economy is going now, how the economy will go is a different question, but how it's going right now, there seems to be like there's plenty of space in the job market, especially for finance majors. But on a larger scale, that question is definitely a question that needs to be asked. And I wish I could, isolate what I see as my ivory tower view from what the view is for the majority. That's definitely the situation where you may have to travel for the job. So
I looked here at the clippings before our conversation, and everyone's saying, maybe to Stephanie's point, that hiring has just gotten better and better for college grads this year. The best in some time. Starting salaries, pretty good. If you're in one of those fields that people are really looking for, Joelle, how's it look to you when you talk with your classmates? you know, what portion are stepping into jobs and what portion are scratching their head and wondering, what am I going to do?
Well, especially where I'm from, anyone in the agriculture field or finance field as well, really have jobs waiting for them when they graduate. But especially in my field, it's a very competitive market. And if you're from a somewhat rural area, as I am, it is hard. I have a lot of experience over my 4 years in college. I've had 2 internships. I've done things on campus. And, you know, if people aren't hiring, what are you supposed to do?
You watched your own father, as I read my notes here, Joelle, lose his job when it got shipped abroad. Do you see that as an issue in your own lifetime and the issue of your generation? The global economy is out there, you know, chomping at the bit.
Well, he had his job for well over 20 years, and like I said, he was working there when he was 19 years old. I feel that going into the workforce with the proper education and continuing to better yourself gives you a greater chance of ensuring that you will have job security. He didn't have that job security because at any one point in time, his company could up and move, but he is going back to college now to, you know, make sure that he has a more stable future ahead of him.
He was making auto parts for Chrysler. Off that went to Mexico. Let's get a call from Nashville. Cameron is on the line. Hi, Cameron. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm also a graduate student in Middle Tennessee State University.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I would like to comment about the ethnic and religious problems, especially in Middle East. We, as the next generation, we need to have a really serious discussion about the American foreign policy, how we engage in that area, because I'm hopeful our classes was reflected in diverse students, international students coming. This hopefully in the future help us to resolve the problems by dialogues and understanding instead of violence or military means, because I strongly believe we cannot win the war on terrorists only by military means. We have to understand the cultural, the ethnic, and also religious aspects of the war.
Cameron, let us pick it up. Joelle, you've got a fairly conservative political profile, as I understand it. Cameron looks out and says, we've got foreign policy troubles here. All the opinion polls say, you know, America not exactly at its most loved moment. What's the answer to that, Joelle?
Well, definitely where I'm from and from a conservative background, you know, you don't get out there and experience a lot of things when it comes to diversity and, you know, getting to know one another. Once I came to school, I got the first opportunity in my life to meet a lot of different people from different cultures. And I think it is an issue that America needs to tackle as far as understanding where people come from and their beliefs and not just, you know, believing in one and that's it.
But what about the world opinion about this country? You know, George Bush has taken us where he's taken us. Is it a good spot? Are you hoping your generation finds a new angle, or do you say more of the same, please?
I hope our generation finds a new angle to come from. I wish people would look at our country and respect and admire how we treat other countries and how we conduct business with them and things of that nature.
Nathan Meeks, a lot of young men and women your age fighting in Iraq right now. You're not. How do you feel about that?
Well, I guess I feel partially lucky. At the same time, there's no way to not be impacted by the fact that people of my age are dying on the other side of the world for my way of life. It just makes me feel like, first of all, we need to really evaluate how we are spending or putting these lives at risk, and second of all, how I should be spending my life knowing that I'm blessed not to be there. So, yeah.
Harry Connor, any guilt feelings about those other Americans not, like, you know, graduating this month, who are out there on the battlefield in the main streets?
I feel actually very sad that if they're in Iraq right now. I mean, I come from a pretty liberal background, and I agree exactly with what Cameron said, that the war on terror cannot be won with military action. It takes acting smarter, not necessarily stronger, to win a war on something like terror. And it makes me sad to think that we keep pushing war and we keep going to war, and, you know, Americans and Iraqis are dying, and it's not getting us anywhere. So it's not so much that I feel guilt. I almost feel sad that's what's happening over there, and we didn't look for other ways to resolve these sorts of conflicts. So I agree exactly with what Cameron said.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a call from Greenfield, Massachusetts. George, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question for the young people. I'm older, and I have become very, very disillusioned by the lack of real, strong, inspirational leadership in this country from the top down. I think most of them are politicians just trying to get reelected. I wonder if the young people see anybody out there who they think have within them the leadership capabilities, the inspirational qualities that might lead this country from the dismal spot that we're in right now.
We'll put it to them. Joelle, what do you see? George is discouraged by the leadership we've had lately. Where are you looking? Is there somebody or some vein of people you're looking to with hope?
Right now, I guess I'm following the presidential candidates, and Rudolph Giuliani has really appealed to me just because he has some of the same standpoints as I do. I would consider myself a moderate Republican. I'm not all the way on the conservative side.
So what is it about Giuliani? Is it his tough stance on national security or his more liberal stance on abortion, gay rights? Which appeals to you?
I guess it'd be a full circle of things. I definitely inspired by the things he did in New York City, you know, when he came in, crime rate was high, and that was cut in half. He did great things with the economy in New York City, how he handled everything after 9/11. I think he is a great leader. He people can look up to him and respect him, and he just kind of seems like a normal guy to me.
Harry Khanna, how about you? Where are you looking for leadership these days? And do you feel the same lack of it that George describes?
Yes, and I think a lot of the country sympathizes with him in the sense that it's been almost 8 years now, and we've been under, at least in my opinion, not particularly good leadership. And I'm excited by the field of candidates we have for the presidential election. I'm particularly excited about Barack Obama. And initially I wasn't too excited about him. But every day, every time I hear a news story about him, I find out a little bit more about him that makes me excited. I mean, his positions, he cares about such things that most people wouldn't care about, things like copyright law and patent law and things that affect me as a scientist, as an engineer. He's coming out and supporting. He's somebody that has taken a stance against the Iraq War from the beginning and has made no secret about that. And that's something that I really, really love, that he had the conviction to stand for what was unpopular at the time, and it turned out to be right. He's clearly a well-reasoned individual who has the guts to do what he thinks.
We're talking this hour with members of the class of 07, college seniors, grads, soon-to-be grads, about their take on the world and the lives they're about to launch. We've got Nathan Meeks with us. He's graduating from Emory University, Joelle Klein from Iowa State, Harry Khanna from UC San Diego, here at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California, is the April 28th speech of Laura Bush to the undergrads of Pepperdine's Seaver College.
Now it's time to freely give. Use your talent and energy to make a better world for people throughout our country and across the globe. You'll find happiness along the way. Congratulations to each and every one of you. Thank you for giving me this chance to share this special day with you. May God bless the Seaver class of 2007.
Time to freely give, says Laura Bush. We've got a lot of people who want to join this conversation. Let me go to Ron in Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm the parent of two college-age students, and one thing near and dear to me is student debt.
Yeah.
So your friend over there on the panel that went to Emory probably owes $80,000, and maybe state universities owe a lot less. And I'd like to hear what they have to look for the future for what their financial situation is going to be to pay off their student debt now that they have an education.
Ron, we'll pick it up, I promise. Let me get one more call and we'll come to it. Phil's calling from Cheshire, Connecticut. Phil, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, it's a pleasure. You're the best in the business.
Thank you, Phil.
I'm a physician and I run a student health service at a local university. And I see at this time of the year students who are about to graduate, and the ones like your young man with the finance degree are sitting pretty There's a lot of them, however, who have sent out lots of resumes, not gotten even a single interview,
mm-hmm.
and now they've got $120,000 in debt plus interest if they've been taking out loans. And they come in and see me because they have various things related to the stress of being done with college and really nowhere to go. So it's definitely a mixed picture, and it's ironic because I graduated in the Watergate era.
Right.
When the sexiest thing you could do was to major in journalism.
Absolutely.
And now journalism majors are in tough shape in terms of the job search.
Jumping off the back of the boat, let us pick up that whole subject. Nathan Meeks, will come to you first. You know, our caller in Augusta says, boy, you must be loaded with debt graduating from Emory. In fact, I know you're not. How did that happen? But and what about your classmates?
I think you bring up a great point, Ron, from Augusta. I did not happen. I was blessed with a scholarship to Emory University, and that's how I do not have debt. But that story is not so common among my colleagues. The issue of student debt is huge in the society today because it has kind of a rippling effect. One, of course, you have students ending up with lots of debt. But two, because they have so much debt, they're forced to get a certain type of job. Laura Bush says we should join this as a common endeavor and give our gifts freely. But as we know, with student debt, nothing comes free. Nothing can come free because you have to pay it back. So what my university has done is something called the Emory Advantage, Ron. And if you have any more kids, I say you send them to Emory because I think it's the best institution in the nation. But the Emory Advantage says from people that earn $0 to $50,000, they will receive full scholarships as far as grants are concerned. Mm. And it attacks even the middle class adversity, saying those families which earn $50,000 to $100,000 are promised their loans are capped at $15,000 for all 4 years. This means for a $43,000 a year education, only $15,000 must be paid back after 4 years. So Emory University is definitely approaching the problem head on, and I hope other universities will follow suit.
So lucky for those who can get that kind of support, but they don't necessarily. Joelle, I know you worked a lot during college. What about the issue of paying for it and your classmates now? Do you have many coming out of Iowa State with debt as a real problem?
Well, I did hold three different jobs during college. Fortunately, both of my internships were paid opportunities, and then I had the same job actually since I was 16 years old through my senior year of college.
Where'd you work there? What was that job? Just curious.
I worked at a Midwest grocery store named Hy-Vee.
Great.
And that is where I actually got my first internship, was at their corporate office. So
okay.
I kind of worked my way up over the years.
Okay. So you've paid along the way. Do you come with debt? Do others in your cohort?
I do come with debt, and a lot of my friends do come with debt. You know, I've had small scholarships and some government aid, but not a lot. But then again, student loans to me are almost the best kind of debt I can have. It's low interest rates, and it can be paid over time. And really, it gives you good credit when you have student debt because banks look at that as a good sign. So,
Harry Khanna, how about you? You're headed for a graduate degree in engineering, bioengineering, probably pretty good prospects there, but it's not time to pay back yet. Have you accumulated debt? And what about your classmates? You're the stress and anxiety that our caller Phil in Connecticut says he sees as a counselor to college students.
Well, luckily, I mean, I go to a state school, so University of California student fees are actually pretty low relative to the rest of the country. So I've been able to escape undergraduate with not much debt. I'm going to grad school at Johns Hopkins, as you know, which is a private institution with a tuition of about $35,000 a year. But luckily, they give their master's students a full fellowship. So I'm going to be able to escape debt from graduate school, too. So I think I've just been really lucky. I've gotten a lot of support from my parents. I've worked kind of odd jobs throughout college, and I've received some small scholarships along the way as well. So I think I got lucky, and I don't have to face the stress that I know most students do have to face.
It's out there, and it's real. Let's go to Megan in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Megan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know?
Well, just like to comment, one of your last callers had, you know, suggested that your panel is not an accurate sampling. I'm graduating this year from the University of Rhode Island and trying to find a job in Boston. I'm actually on my way back from an interview now, and it's just been, you know, amazingly difficult to find anything.
What's your field, Megan? Where are you looking?
I have doing with a degree in psychology and political science, and I'm, you know, trying to get a job working in a law office. I one day hope to go to law school in Boston, probably next year. but, you know, it's almost time for me to pay the piper with the student loans, and I'm not having any luck at all, you know, finding anything lucrative.
Well, and we hear you right there on the cell phone, right out of the interview. Megan, we wish you luck with that, and it's a good reality check to bear in mind. We're glad for your call. Let me get another from Judy in Boston. Judy, you're on the air.
Good day. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here at the end of the bio conference, and I've been chopping at the bit. So
you've been at a big biotechnology conference. Okay, yeah.
I'm an oncology nurse, and I've worked with breast cancer for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I look out over the spans of knowledge in this one convention center and feel so hopeful for some of the changes that can occur.
This is a big national global conference in Boston right now. So when you hear these young voices, what do you think, Judy?
Well, I actually think I wear two hats, of course, a mother hat. I have two students, one son that's actually going to medical school in the fall, daughter that's a junior at Boston College who's in finance. And actually, I challenge these three wonderful students that you have before your panel. You have the world at your feet, but you have an obligation, regardless of whether you go to Wall Street or you do biotechnology or whatever field you choose. I challenge you to do something along the lines of social justice. Find your passion and follow that passion. If you make millions of dollars on Wall Street, don't use it just to buy yourself materialistic things. I feel embarrassed that my generation, the generation of the Vietnam War, who was so helpful in bringing about change, didn't accomplish its goal. We didn't accomplish our challenge.
Yep.
And I hope that all of you will take on the challenge. And I apologize to all of you for leaving a world that you're inheriting that has so many ills, whether it's you heard ex-President Clinton speak so beautifully about all the ills of the world. I'm sorry about Darfur. I'm sorry that Fidelity continues to invest in products that support the genocide that's going on in Darfur.
So there's a challenge and an apology, and we hear it, Judy. Thanks for that call. Nathan, how about it? You're kind of the iconic one headed for Wall Street here, and Judy says, on the challenge side, don't forget about social justice. You're an African-American headed into what may be a high-paying career. You know what the income spread in this country is now. How do you think about social justice as a piece of your world, your life, your future?
I think I was going to bring it up on the leadership question, but I think Judy has a great point. What I didn't tell you guys is that long-term, I mean, I love the job with the investment bank that I'm having, but long-term, I want to do a lot with education. And my challenge, and I believe my God-given purpose, is to build schools and to kind of revolutionize our approach to learning. So I think that's really characteristic of our generation, in fact. A lot of us are doing things that we feel like are going to earn us money to get us out of student debt and things like that. But the real leadership of this country is going to come from us. And I don't mean, you know, one person. I mean, as a group, as you see, enrollment for Teach for America and Peace Corps has skyrocketed. The call for social justice is not being unanswered within our generation, and I think those statistics are just a part of it. So yes, while many of us may go to jobs that need to pay well, we like the jobs, but also because we need to pay off student debt, eventually that social consciousness has not been abandoned by our generation. We are fully conscious of our obligation.
And Joelle, Harry, what about Judy's apology? She says, look, I'm the boomer generation, the Vietnam War generation, I never expected to leave you with that pile of challenges that Bill Clinton outlined there, from war to the environmental challenge to violence, Darfur, all the rest. Joelle, do you feel, and we haven't even talked about the national debt you're looking at, the burden that it's going to be to take care of the boomers as they age, do you feel ripped off or handed a bad hand by the generation before you, Joelle?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. It's definitely a scary thought to think that we may not have Social Security when it comes time for us to retire, but then in certain ways that may help our generation work harder to make this place better for the next generation. So in some ways, it does harm us, but in some ways, it makes us stronger.
Harry, there's a kind of blissful optimism that comes with youth, but there's Judy saying, you know, you shouldn't have been handed the world that you're inheriting. How do you respond to that?
Well, Judy, no apology is necessary. The world is better off today, in my opinion, than it was 50 years ago. And 50 years ago, it was better off than it was 100 years ago.
In environmental terms?
Not in environmental terms, but in technological terms, in the quality of life terms. I think the quality of life for citizens around the world are better on the whole than they were 50 or 100 years ago. I mean, there are obviously major atrocities going on in the world that is on us to help start correct. But hopefully in 50 years, our generation will be able to say, look, we were able to fix some of these things, but this world will never be perfect.
Harry, let me ask you if I could. Your family originally came from India. Now we've got this globalized economy. Judy spoke about social justice. There's a lot of concern about American jobs going abroad to China or India or elsewhere, yet there's a lot of people there who want and need jobs. How do you look, as a 21-year-old looking out on how do you look at social justice and the global economy? What's fair when it comes to jobs and standards of living?
Well, those are two different questions. Let me answer the job one. I'm a little conflicted on this. On the one hand, I'm worried about jobs in America, and I want our country to do well and to prosper and its economy to prosper. But on the other hand, I make no distinction between American citizens and citizens of other countries in the world. I mean, we're all people. We're all humans. So if a job goes to someone in India or Indonesia that improves their quality of life, I mean, I think that's a good thing. I think it's bad for the economy here in America, and it's bad for jobs in American citizens. But I think the human in me makes it so I don't distinguish between American citizens and citizens of other countries. And, I mean, that's just kind of how I feel. Mm.
There's a global view. Let me get one more call from Iowa City. Nick is calling. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a recent grad from University of Iowa, and I have a degree in computer science. I graduated in 2004. And to talk about jobs, I'm an electrician, and I don't do it because I have to. I love working. I love working with my hands.
Yep.
My big, thing is our country's never going to get anything done until we get our campaign finance reform stuff.
Why not? What's the problem that's producing? Big money campaigns.
It's all about money. It makes it so everybody just piles as much money in one big pile while they can.
And when it's about money, what do we miss, Nick?
The social justice. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, we only got so much time on this earth, and if you got to spend all that time looking to, dying well or, retiring, then you're not going to have any time to actually make a difference. And just there's places where money drives the economy great. Private business is awesome. But it's completely obvious to me, and I think a lot of everybody else, that you can't give yourself a raise, and you can't. The politics aren't going to change until the money gets out of it.
Joel, there's Nick just up the pike from you. What do you say? He's worried that we've got a system that just isn't working because money's driving politics and justice ends up the victim, he says.
I agree with him to a certain extent. In other sense, money does make the world go round. We all need money to live and prosper. And I think when people go out into the work world, we think about ourselves and we think about how we're going to raise our families and make our lives better before we think about other people's lives. But in the same hand, if we don't, we have to take care of ourselves before we can take care of others.
You're going to have a family? You're looking forward to that?
Yes, definitely.
And what about the world your kids will grow in? That wouldn't be too long from now. Are you happy about the world you'll bring them into?
Not necessarily, especially with all of the things with Social Security and global warming. Those things are going to affect them just as much as they're affecting us, and maybe even more. And it is a scary thing.
Mm. Nathan, a final thought there. You hear the sort of people saying, you got big problems you're facing into here. You may feel good about your future, but boy, don't underestimate what you're up against. What do you think?
I mean, I think all of the all of the concerns are definitely justified. I mean, there's no question that we have a lot to overcome. At the same time, I feel like for the most part, we are well prepared. Even approaching the Social Security issue, which is of great concern to our generation, because we do feel like we are paying for someone else's security and not our own. The only good thing is that we got warning early, so at least we can plan for the future. I feel more sorry for the people that are 30, 35 that did not know when they started working and they didn't have the chance to plan, and now they're going into a system that's most sure yeah. to be yep. need to be rescued.
And with that, we're out of time. Nathan Meeks at Emory, Harry Khanna at UC San Diego, Joel Klein at Iowa State, good luck to you all, and thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Good luck to all the class of 07. This is On Point.